Another episode of the Non-Standard Podcast. I'm your host, Manny Lampson, and today is part one of a part two podcast episode with my main man, Michael Manazzi. And the way we met is pretty crazy. I'll keep it pretty short on the intro. We met at the Air Force Marathon a couple years ago when I was going through my journey. He is a race walker. He is also an Air Force Athlete of the Year as an A1C. He enlisted right before COVID, so a very critical time. He was married, had kids before he enlisted, so he was already well-established and experienced in life. And man, it's just phenomenal to hear his story. He is a super, super humble and motivating individual, and I look forward to everybody who just takes a little bit away from this episode. Now remember, after every episode, if you loved anything you heard or you want to share it with somebody, it's pretty simple. Just save, comment, like, share, provide some feedback. That's all we can do there. If you want to reach out to me, you can do that on my Instagram at Manny Mustache. I look forward to this episode, and please keep adding leadership tools to your belt every day.
What is up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in this episode. As you listened to in the intro, I got my man Michael on the pod today, and this is one of the first ones where before we even started recording, we were like, we were getting ready, man. We were talking about things, we were moving. And so we had to sort of be like, okay, let's can that for the podcast, because we were catching up too. And I've told plenty of people this before on my podcast. I told Michael this before. I love doing these because for me, it's a great time to catch up with the people I haven't talked to in a long time. That's why I reach out to some of these people is one, I haven't talked to them in a while and I've been meaning to. So what better way than on a podcast for a bunch of people to listen to, and then for me to take notes and learn as well. But with that being said, we're just going to jump right into this. Michael, just like you've heard before, we're going to start with the three H's, you know, your hometown, your heroes, and your hardships. And like I said before, if there's any leadership stuff or anything, just talk about it, man. Like, just go. I'll throw in some stuff if I feel like there's a good note there. But with that being said, man, who is Michael, man? Like, let's hear it. I know a little bit, but.
All right, Manny. Well, you're right. This is a great way to catch up. And so you're making it count. And that's typically your style. If you're going to make something happen, you're going to make it count and make it impactful. And that's one thing that I have appreciated about you from day one. But to get started, my hometown is Youngstown, Ohio. It's a small Rust Belt city in Northeast Ohio, formerly one of the steel capitals of the United States. Up until about close to 50 years ago. And then I was in Wright-Patterson, so Dayton was home. And then until about just under 2 years ago, now San Diego is home. And I can go into that later, how that came to be, because that's, of course, no Air Force Base, Force Base there. So, regarding the three H's, the second H with the heroes, I would definitely say my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, number one. That's impacted my life to get me to where I am now. Not as in the way people think. It's not just, oh, I just a lucky charm. It's certain that something that has shaped who I am, shaped my values, shaped how I treat other people, shaped how I deal with adversity. My other hero would be my late father. Once again, this individual, he had to deal with hardships beyond what I could imagine, dealing with MS and being bedridden for about 7 years before he passed and unable to walk the last 10 years. So myself being a United States team race walker is a bit ironic and a bit deeper meaning for me because of watching my father. So he is definitely, and he never complained. He never said, why me? He said, why not me? So that to me, as a man in my 30s, as I'm a father now and in the Air Force and now about to be an NCO and have to lead other people and have other people under your care, it really comes back to my why and what got you to think the way you think. So when I think of my father as well, I think of things could always be much more difficult, and yet he handled it much more gracefully than I could have imagined I would. So he's a better man than I am. Anyhow, I would say another one that's risen up on my list has been like Jocko Willink, listening to his podcast. Very, very astute and very applicable principles. I also enjoy Simon Sinek, as well as There's multiple motivational speakers, and I think the list would go on too long, but there are a couple that rise to the top, as well as many leaders in the Air and Space Force. I have been in a position where many people in that list would be way too long to go across in this, but there's been multiple people at every base, at every stage of my life, before the military a little bit, but especially since we've been in the military, that have poured wisdom into me, mentorship, patience while I've made mistakes, and allowed me to learn and grow and mentor me in that process. So to help me see things from a perspective, because of course, if they have been in longer, they have a greater depth perception than I would have. I've only have a little bit of runway behind me with only 4 years experience. So I highly value people, not only in career fields that I'm not in, that they have experience, but also these leaders that have principles and habits and attitudes after years of being in that have poured into me and modeled for me, not only to be successful, but to be impactful on the mission, on the Air Force, while we serve and the people that we serve.
I love that, man. That's cool. I really appreciate how you are taking heroes as they come throughout your life. You know, a lot of people, heck, even me, we think of heroes as people that were in our past, you know, that may not be currently around us at the physical moment, or as we grew up, you know, we see heroes or, you know, celebrities or role models, something like that. But you're still embracing that hero role daily whenever you move somewhere, as you build mentors and leaders and idols. That's really cool, man. I got to start doing that a little bit more. I think we take for granted the people around us can be a hero, you know, even though they may only be around us for a day or a couple weeks helping us do something little, understanding like that role, you know, can last a long time. And we'll dive into your career and how it's impacted you, because I can't wait to hear it as well. But yeah, I appreciate that take on the hero perspective. That's cool, man.
No, thank you. And one in particular that jumps out, and no injustice to anyone else doesn't get mentioned in this moment, in my mind at this very moment, is Tech Sergeant Joshua Jevedon. He was vehicular maintenance prior to religious affairs. He was my supervisor. He became my supervisor, Wright Patterson. And he was someone that we both didn't think we were going to get along, which we later came to conclusion. After I left Wright Pat, we had that conversation that wouldn't have been probably comfortable to have there. And we're almost the same age. He was Air Force out of high school. I was Air Force, came in my 30s. And he basically became not only a valuable mentor because he was able to be brutally honest with me, but also he became one of my best friends to this day. And even though he was no longer my supervisor, he's helped prepare me in so many ways to this day on how to have perspective on my career. And I'm sure we'll touch upon that later. Because it does have a role in some of the other parts of the this podcast. But yeah, he's just one that jumps in my mind at the moment.
Nice. Cool, man. All right, now always a tougher one, because I have people think about this before. Some hardships that have developed you or got you to where you are, or, you know, you're in the process of, because there's usually, you know, the road is never as easy as we want it to be. But what do you got?
You know, I've got three that I think were relevant to pull for this interview. The list can go on as well in that end. However, keeping it relevant to where we're going with this, I think that when I was younger, I struggled to stay with sports or not stay with sports. I had some setbacks getting cut from middle school football. Didn't do any sports in middle school. High school, I didn't start in football until a couple plays my senior year. Well, one my junior year, then a few my senior year, but really wasn't looked at very serious. Didn't show much promise. Wrestling was my most promising sport. 1 year of track, which makes it really miraculous kind of how my career has gone with track. So I was in a position where I wouldn't quit the football team, wouldn't quit the wrestling team. I did eventually quit track to do freestyle and Greco wrestling because it was my strongest sport at the time. So I thought, and my stepfather, actually, this isn't my biological father, but I was raised by my stepfather, my first stepfather, and we didn't see eye to eye on certain things. And part of it's that I was a kid and I was impulsive and energetic and bouncing off the walls. And, you know, you had a lot of growing up to do, but there was one area where I remember we had a disagreement at the dinner table, and unfortunately, I don't, you know, these conversations, they do impact me now to not have these kind of discussions at a dinner table with my children. But he brought up that I wasn't, should probably quit. It was either the track team or the wrestling team. I believe it was the wrestling team, that I should quit the team because I wasn't doing that good at it. And I think it might have been track, but either which way, it was my first year doing it. I did that 1 year of track and I did 2 years of wrestling. So it might have been my first year of wrestling or just the 1 year of track. So when you're brand new to something, you're not going to be a state champ right away. You're going to have to earn your stripes, you know, go out too fast in an 800 and crash and finish second to last or something. Things like that are going to happen. You know, you're going to get beat you're going to win no matches your first wrestling tournament because you've only been in the sport 2 months. That's just the nature of the game. That's how you have to learn. Of course, as a 16-year-old, I don't have that wisdom, the type of maturity to understand that. So when I'm having this conversation at the dinner table, it basically comes down to, hey, you're not good at sports. You might as well quit. And I said, no, I'm not going to quit. And he said, well, not only the sad part of you about you is that it's not that you're not good at sports. It's that you're too stupid to know it. And I remember that, and it was a very conflicting situation for me because this is a person who has helped raise me, but he's not my biological father. And I don't think my father would have talked to me like that. And I now know that he wouldn't have. But of course, at the time, it's very confusing. And you feel that the pressure, the social peer pressure around you and of your family is very strong, especially at that age. And you feel like you're disobeying, you're doing something wrong. And looking back, I did exactly what I was supposed to do, which was keep going. And that was a hardship in the sense that I always had to, I had to shed that chip on my shoulder that you're not meant to be an athlete, that you're not an athlete, and that you're too dumb to know it. And it took a long time for me to come to terms. Now, I was relentless, but deep inside, I had to remind myself, like, this doesn't have to define you. And that's where I think today, it can help other people is other people's opinions of you don't have to really become your reality. And that took me a long time. And, you know, I'm in the Air Force. We already know we're having this podcast. Things have come, a galaxy away from that moment at that dinner table. Not to mention that's a horrible dinner experience. But you know, I was 16, 17, here we are. And that was one of those hardships that I had to shake. And also with that, there was a second element. People are not always going to care or respect or support what you do. And you have to do it anyway. That's what I would say, because you're not going to always have people on the sideline cheering for you. You're not going to have your home family or nuclear family or people within your shop or people within your community are not always going to show an interest, an understanding, or care about what you're doing. And that doesn't mean that you don't have value. It doesn't mean that what you're doing is stupid or a waste of time, regardless of what they think. Because at the end of the day, you have to live with your life actions and the results. They really don't, unless they're a close friend or someone that you have a relationship with and they involve themselves or show interest. It's okay if they don't. And I've had to learn this up to now. It's still a process. It's okay if people around you that should support you, or I mean, at least maybe should show an acknowledgement that you breathe and exist and are doing something more than that. They may not, and do it anyway. So
you covered a few things there. I'll jump in on some. I'll just throw in some leadership traits as I hear you talk about them. One was, don't worry about the opinions of others. There are too many times where we will make decisions in fear of thinking what other people are going to think or say, when in reality, they haven't even expressed. Most of the time, they probably don't even care what we're going to do, but we change a lot of our decisions based off of the opinions of what we think others are going to have on us. And that is a hard thing to break. But there are a lot of people who'd be so much more successful or so much more motivated if they just cleared that fear of thought, right? Or fear of opinion of other people. Because like you already said, all what matters is what you are doing, what you are physically doing for yourself. Yes, there are people that their opinions will probably matter a lot more, like our immediate family, et cetera. But still, we have to boil down what works best for us. And you also talked about the support as well. Dang, there's something else. I'll probably let you keep going after this, but that's what I loved you already talk about is, hey, you need to focus on you, do you, and then in the long run, it'll all work out. But yeah, so keep going from there.
And that's the hard part. You're not always going to have the cheers while you're doing the hard stuff by yourself. The things we see on TV, this, you know, the crowds in the stands, that's not what it is for most people, even most athletes. And so it's hurtful when people around you that you depend on or have depended on may not support you, but you got to find a way. And you do impact people. Like you said, in the long run, you will impact people. You just don't always see how yet. Like Martin Luther King said, you just take the next step and then you'll see further. And so with you and yourself, Manny, and other people's, like there was Major Jankerson, Lieutenant Colonel Pineda, these people have owed me nothing but have believed in me in the Air Force. And I have benefited immensely from, and I appreciate tenfold the people that do care, because I know what it's like to go through the people that either don't care, don't want to support you, are actually passive aggressive towards you, and you have to find a way forward and have to mentally process all of that. So when the people like yourself do care and do give that support and of their time and of their resources and experience, it benefits you not just in the value that they bring and the wisdom, but also the fact that they care. So you, because you know that it's not promised, you know, not everybody does.
Yeah, and I think you already hit another great one, which I wish more people would do more often, is show praise, right? Show support, show that they care a lot. And what's really hard in society is we always hear the people who don't care, but we want to hear the people that do care, but they're just either like too shy to say they care because they don't want, they're worried about what other people think, right? So let's say somebody were to go, Michael, man, you're crushing it, keep it up. But they're nervous to do it because what if they're like, oh, I don't want somebody to, I don't know, no, I'm supporting him, or, you know, they start thinking some other things, so they don't do it. That's why one way for us to maintain a positive mental attitude, building better relationships, and to see the culture thrive is show more appreciation. And that's literally in the book I'm going to talk about today, is if we can just go out and show that we care for somebody, even if it's a simple, just like text, like, hey man, keep it up today. I saw your post on your walk this weekend. You know, keep it up. You know, like, it takes 30 seconds for us to show care and appreciation, but most people don't do it because they're not getting the support that they're doing it, right? They want the recognition. So you may only see those every once in a while when you do something good, you know, like when you probably finish a picture for your race, you know, you get a lot of praise there, but we sometimes are looking for that praise when it's dark and lonely, when nobody's around us. We're waiting for that one little message of like, hey dude, keep it up today. Like, your race is in a couple weeks. I know you're training. Oh dude, thanks man. Like, I need that more than what I do when I post my medals, you know, or something like that. And so if there's one thing already that somebody can take from this, is like, there's probably somebody out there you can show praise to. If I were you after this podcast, just shoot them a text and say, keep it up, because that will mean the world to just that person. But yeah.
No, totally agree. That's an excellent way to take simple action on that. Mm-hmm. Instead of waiting for it, you know, be the change, right? Get out there and be the change agent instead of waiting for somebody else to recognize you.
All right, did you have another hardship or?
A couple. I know we went pretty in depth in that. And yeah, it's okay that sometimes people won't reconcile. You try, you can treat people well, and that's all you have control over is your attitude and your actions. You don't have control over other people, how they view you. You have influence, but you don't control it. You also don't control their emotions and their battles that they might be fighting that impact why they treat you the way they do. And I'm in no way shaming people. It's actually built me into be a better person, more equipped for the Chapel Corps to deal with other people, help them through their challenges. So that's kind of the wrapping up of that situation, of that hardship. And of course, I've lived my dream despite that.
Yeah. What were you gonna say? You're good.
Oh, I was gonna go into the second hardship, but I didn't know if you're gonna add something.
No, jump into it. You're good.
I would say the second was when I was moved to South Carolina. I was race walking with a U.S. teammate of mine. We were gonna try to make the Olympics. That he quit. That kind of pulled the rug out from under the plans. But I had my wife. We were trying to figure out how to sponsor her to the U.S. I was struggling financially. You know, we're on EBT and WIC, or, you know, people call it food stamps. It was a difficult time because now I have to switch hats and prioritize my family versus the Olympic pursuit. And it put things a bit in limbo for a couple years where race walking, I would emerge here and there, but it pretty much would take a second or a back seat, second priority to how am I going to provide for my family? And this is all prior to the Air Force. But had it not been through that experience, I would not be in the Air Force. Number one, I was during working at the shoe store in South Carolina that veteran had suggested, which planted a seed that led to 10 other things happening that for me to be interested in the Air Force. And also that hardship seasoned me and prepared me for the challenges that you're going to face in the Air Force, such as being away from family at times. So being away from family, although it's difficult, it's not as hard as, in my opinion, it wasn't as hard as struggling perpetually with your family and the feeling to try to provide and protect for them, and you feel like it's a sinking ship around all of you, and you're trying to find a way to make it stay afloat. So that was another hardship before the Air Force that I think at the time it was embarrassing. It was difficult. You tried to make two Olympic teams and you had nothing to show for it. So it seemed to them in the moment. Yet it actually prepared me immensely for the Air Force. In fact, not only was I in South Carolina, but we moved back to Toronto when my wife was getting prenatal care when she was pregnant with our second child. They're about a year and a half. They're 19 months apart. And so when I moved back to Canada and I made it work there, living there for about another 2.5 years before we got her permanent residence or green card to come back to the States so I could bring the whole family back before I had enlisted. And had I not done that, we would have been separated even longer because COVID hit a few months later. So I would have been out of a job in Toronto, Canada. I would have been out of a job because I worked in footwear sales. Well, you have to interact with people. That would have been out once the lockdown would have happened. And I would have been separated had I been in the military and they not come across and I had not done my due diligence to make sure they all came, we came as a family, not separated. I would not have seen them until, gosh, maybe a year or two because I was in tech school for weather. So anyhow, that hardship of that experience actually prepared me to do even better for my family and to do have even more value to the Air Force and to ultimately like the world around us. So I couldn't have seen that then, but that was a second hardship because during that couple of years, let me just tell you, you're pretty much exposed and you feel like a failure when you're trying to take care of your family. And I'm still paying school debt. It was quite difficult. There's more to it, but it was pretty difficult. And we were living with other people. I mean, we couldn't afford a place on our own, didn't have enough credit. But thankfully, my mom's, her husband, now Brian McGowan, he joint sponsored so I could bring my wife to the States. He didn't have to pay, but he just basically did a big thing for us where if something happened to me that I had died or we had divorced, he was financially responsible for her and for healthcare. And so I appreciated him taking that leap and trusting me that I wouldn't need to call him up on it. But that was clutch because I didn't want to come back and join the Air Force until my family could all be here. So that's kind of multiple hardships really wrapped in one, I would say, 2.5 year period.
And then this will transition great into your career, right? So it sounds like, just like you mentioned, going through the hardship, you decided to, and how'd that come about? How did the joining the military for you, pop up? Sounds like were you in Canada when you decided to enlist, or?
I was in, so it's funny. I grew up and I might not have always seen eye to eye with my first stepfather, but he was always supportive of the military and supported the idea of joining the military. And so I had that kind of in the back of my mind that the military does have good things to offer. I couldn't see it. I wouldn't have been a good candidate out of high school. I definitely don't think I would have had the perspective that I would have needed to come in the right circumstances and maturity. So I'm in South Carolina, working at a shoe store part-time, so I could try to train full-time. I was second in the country at that point, best U.S. ranking at an Olympic distance I'd ever been, big PR. So the South Carolina winter paid off. I had a training partner for about a month, And he quit, and, you know, I just got out there regardless. That was a big growing step to get out there. You know, whether you have people with you or not, it's always easier to suffer together, but sometimes mm-hmm. you got to, I learned that most of the time it would be a do-it-yourself project. And so when I was at the running store, I ended up helping this Air Force veteran who had done, I think, 8 years as a mechanic. He met his wife in Germany. He was speaking German on the phone with his wife to help her pick out shoes for her as well as I was helping him at the same time. And I asked him throughout the conversation how he met his wife. And he later told me it was through the Air Force. And he said he was very happy with my service, asked me how I knew so much about shoes. So I told him I use them to run and race walk in. He didn't know what race walking was, so I explained it. He asked if I was any good at it. And I said yes. And he asked how good. And I tried not to – I tried to be humble. But my store manager.
But you always are. You are always so humble, man.
I appreciate that because I don't know. Sometimes, you know, I don't know. Like, you know, you try to be honest with people without, but it can come off as bragging, yep. but you're not really bragging. You know, mm-hmm. like if someone asked me, did you win Athlete of the Year or did you ever win an award? It's like, well, yeah, I did. But you're not bragging. You're just answering their question. Right. Or if they're like, well, what have you ever done in your sport? And it's like, well, where do you want me to start with this? Right. So you're trying to be humble, but it's if they're going to perceive you as bragging, I mean, they're going to perceive it anyway. It's usually from their perspective anyway, not from necessarily that you are trying to brag, your intent. And so this individual asked how good I was. My store manager finally got frustrated and said, he's second in the country. He yelled it across the store. And he goes, if you're second in the country, what does first in the country do? And I said, well, he's in the Army WCAP program. He says, why don't you, he says, why don't you join that? Instead of like, he's like, I'm not trying to be too personal here, but I imagine you get paid better than whatever you get paid working at a running store. And he said, do you mind me asking how much you get paid? And I said, $10 an hour. He goes, $10 an hour? And you've got kids? He goes, how can you do that? I said, it's been very difficult. Prize, you know, I try to rely on prize money that I could get, other sources of help. And I'm working here. And he said, well, why don't you judge? And I said, I've already looked into the Army. I don't have the Olympic standard. You don't get in if you don't have the standard, at least at the time. That was 2017. And that was the policy when I called him in 2012. And he said, well, I was in the Air Force for 8 years. I loved it. Why don't you, does the Air Force have a program? I said, they do. He says, why don't you join theirs? And I said, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't get in theirs either. He said, well, do you know what their standards are? I said, probably the same as the Army. He said, did you look? I said, no. And so my store manager, a bit at this point, want me to move on to help other customers, quickly let me use the store tablet to look up the requirements to get into WCAP. At the time, they've become much more competitive since then. But at the time, it was top 10 in the country in a letter from your national governing body. I was like, wow, I'm number two. I could get that letter. This would be a win and always possible. So I end up calling. There was an Air Force WCAP Olympian that I just missed. He retired just as I was getting in the sport. He separated as a major. He was a missile launch operator and an academy grad named Kevin Eastler. So I call his father, who I had a good rapport with. His father is his father was a giant of a person, the late Tom Eastler. He was a general in the Guard or Reserve, or was he a colonel? No, he was a colonel. And he almost made general, but he would never have told you that. However, this man in race walking managed to get the first state that has race walking for boys and girls as a high school state championship in Maine. So that's not a large pool for colleges in a way. Colleges still pull, but obviously it's convenient because most of us come from being distance runners. So you still have a lot of the ideal athletes to pull into race walking at college. But Tom Eastler did it one better, and he got it in the state champs. So I met Tom Eastler at a talent ID camp when I first got in the sport in 2008, and we connected pretty darn well. Like I said, he was just an incredible human, incredible person. He did so much for the sport and was, I would say, like us, he values a positive network. And so Tom Eastler, I call him in the back of the store on my lunch break. And I knew, and I said, I want to talk to you about the Air Force. And before I could say anything more, he said, oh, my son was in the Air Force. You know, he was in the Olympics. And I said, well, I want to race. I didn't even get to tell him what all I wanted to do. He said, let me send an email introducing you both. I'm coming. And he said, but the problem is you're in Canada. And he just moved to South Carolina with his job with GE. And I said, Tom, I just moved to South Carolina like 4 months ago. He said, "You're kidding." He said, "Well, we're visiting next month. Let's all get together and have lunch."
Dude.
Yeah, so guess what they do? They take us to the Cheesecake Factory. We're on food stamps, right? And we go to the Cheesecake Factory with them. And my wife and I were like, it was like a 5-star experience, you know, so at the time. So, you know, it was just such a treat and such a kind gesture, rolling out the red carpet for us, I guess. But we go there and he, you know, he says, "Hey, you know, I'm here visiting family, but you have an hour of my time. What questions do you have about the Air Force or WCAP?" And his dad goes, "Oh, this is so great. We're going to get another race walker and WCAP in the Air Force." And he goes, "Dad, would you please let him ask the questions?" but that just shows what a great, what a amazing individual Tom Eastler. He was larger than life. And so Kevin became a friend for life in that moment. Little did we know Tom would pass away in a year and a half. But the friendship with Kevin has been forever. And Kevin has been a mentor to me through these years. I knew the other mentors would emerge organically through this interview, but Kevin has been such a valuable and appreciated mentor. And what Kevin did is he's like, "Hey, try to get in the Air Force, you know, like first you're going to have to get in, then try to get in WCAP. You're going to have, you know, we were talking about officer, it would take longer to become an officer. So we're going to try to enlist because you can wait up to 2 years to try to go officer and then WCAP, right?"
Yeah.
"You're looking at up to, I don't have 2 years. My wife's pregnant. We're struggling. You know, we're living with other people, you know, staying in their house. And cause we can't, you know, we're on a wait list for government housing." And so we really did, you know, time was of the essence. At this same time, my late father, his brother lived an hour and 20 minutes away in Georgia. His brother is a Vietnam War vet from the Air Force. I've seen him maybe a handful in my whole life. I'm 30 years old. I've seen him maybe 5 times in my whole life. And I got to get close with him and his wife. And his son is currently a master sergeant. He was a combat arms instructor at the time at Dobbins, and he lived nearby. And so we got to know them, and I got to know a part of me that I didn't get to know, which is my father's side. You know, you're part of both of your families, right? Your mother and father's side. So I had this rare, and you couldn't put $1 million for me to trade this experience of getting to know my late father's brother, who I later found out was his best friend and role model. And about that for kind of finding your roots and finding out, you know, almost like your father's life. And my cousin, who is my father's nephew, of course, he's currently in the Air Force, as I mentioned. He came to one of my races and just super supportive. He treated my wife and I to lunch. And then he's talking to us about his Air Force experience. And these two men, like, you know, my uncle, my cousin, they're pretty level-headed. They're family-oriented. They figured out a way to take struggles and be successful, and the Air Force helped them both do that. And so that, there you go. Now, you know, I'm basically, we're desperate. My wife just wants me to do something, you know, to figure out, right? At this point, right, race walking's about to be off the table because I'm going to be in, you know, I'm going to have bigger problems on my hands. And so I said, "I'm going to join the Air Force." And my wife says, "Don't talk about it. Just do it," because she's, you know, she's pregnant. She just needs to know, like,
I love like, that. How are we gonna do it.
And she's about to leave. She left 2 weeks later because her visa was going to expire, her tourist visa.
Okay.
So she's got, you know, her head was in the right place. Like we're in a big problem and we got to figure it out. So let's just go. So I try to get a hold of recruiters, man, after work at the shoe store, I looked at all the jobs. And I was like, "Chaplain assistant, that's me." So I try to get a hold of the recruiters, and I don't hear back from them. Then I move back to Canada. And what happens is they get a hold of me while I'm now in Canada. It took me almost 2 months to get a job in Canada. I applied 17 places. And yeah, at the time, and you know, I've got a bachelor's degree in education, but I mean, I'm applying for like jobs at A&W. I tried a running store called The Running Room there. And then I finally got hired at a store called Sport Check. It's their equivalent of Dick's Sporting Goods in Canada. And I wasn't going to get hired, but here's what happened. I applied at multiple locations too. And I was in line to buy swim goggles. I'm injured at this point, by the way. I failed to mention I got injured while I was in South Carolina. So you go from second in the country to injured, and now you don't know what to do. You've got bigger issues with your family that consume your time, to let alone to try to figure out how you're going to help your injury, because that you don't even know what it is. So I'm in Canada now, and the recruiters start calling me back. And I said to him, "I know a job I want to get. I'm going to be a chaplain assistant." And he's like, "You can't be a chaplain assistant as a pipeliner." I said, pipeliner, are you talking about plumbing? And he's like, no, pipeliner is a term for a first time, it's a first time airman. Yeah. And I said, yeah, but I said, I would be amazing. I said, this would be it for me. And he said, you have to cross train another job. I said, you mean to tell me you're going to have some 18-year-old no life experience tell me about my marriage? And he's like, I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. He's like, you cannot get this job unless you cross train. And I said, explain what cross training meant. And so I was, of course, a little bit heartbroken at the moment because I'm obviously desperate. And he said, but, we could try to find some other jobs. I said, I tried to get information on WCAP. No information from him on WCAP, of course. Then I had talking to recruiters. He said, well, if you moved, you have to talk to a recruiter in your state of address, or your home address, which was Ohio at that point, because my mother still lives in Ohio. And so I now am trying to reach out to recruiters in Ohio, both officer and enlisted. All in all, I talked to 12 different recruiters before I actually got into the Air Force, between officer and enlisted. I also want to take a step back and share that I did call the WCAP director at the time. Kevin Eastler had his number. And, thankfully he kindly shared that. And I called this WCAP director. And this is March of 2017. And we start talking, and I said, hey, I want to get in WCAP. This comes full circle later. But basically, he said, there's no point in having a conversation with you. You're not in the Air Force. You're not medically cleared for the Air Force. You haven't started the recruiting process. And you don't just join off the street and get into the Olympic world-class athlete program. That's not how this works. And I said, well, then how do you get in? He said, where do you get your athletes? And he said, well, most of them come out of the academy, Division I schools. And, I was a national champ, so I certainly wasn't going to be pushed aside on any of those measures. So I also knew they were from the academy. I looked at the website and I realized 4 out of 16 made the trials in 16. Only one, Cale Simmons, the pole vaulter, made the Olympics. I would have been their second most successful athlete in their 2016 roster. However, that didn't matter. I wasn't in the Air Force. It doesn't work. So I knew that the burden of proof was still on me. I had to find a way to make this happen. Well, guess what? He told me there's no point in having a conversation with you until you're in the Air Force. I said, well, how long is that going to be? He says, you might be looking at a year and a half by the time you get in, get through training. And he goes, and then that's if you get in, but I'll talk to you then. Bye. And that was it. And I was like, what? I was like, this is in it. So I that wasn't the most confident building opportunity, but so you can imagine I was pretty this is crazy. This is a miss. I got to figure this out. I had told Army WCAP's John Nunn in the 2015 Pan Am Games, I had declined. He said, you should just join the Army because it would help you. And I said, I thought about it for like 2 days and I said, nah, I'm not joining the Army. And I just didn't have a full understanding and scope of what the military has to offer. Yeah. Not that that was, I'm against that, but the timing wasn't right. Everything came in the right time for me. And I also didn't have 2 children yet. So there, the desperation and the need to provide was not, my wife's not from the state, so I couldn't just drop that burden on her. It wasn't the same circumstances in the perfect storm. So I'm back in, now I'm back, I moved back to Canada in June or July of 2017, looking for jobs. I finally got that job. I almost didn't get it, but because, they get all these applications, nothing separates you on paper. However, because I was injured, I was in line to buy goggles so I could swim. Where we were subletting a unit, we lived in a one-bedroom apartment. We subletted from someone, and they had a pool in the back that was open a whole 3 months out of the year. We're in Canada, right? And so I would try to take advantage of it to swim in it. Plus, we're paying rent handsomely for rent anyway. And so I'm in line to buy these goggles, and a woman and her child are there, and they're buying like running shoes or something. And I commented on them and we had a conversation. This complete stranger, right? I'm not from Canada. I'm not from Toronto, but here I am kicking it up. Well, with the store man, the footwear full-timer, actually he was the footwear manager. I didn't know this, but he watched me as I left the store and bought those goggles. And he saw me strike up a conversation with her out of nowhere. So when I left, I found out about a year later, he walked up to my application. He put a sticky note on it and said, hire him now. Because they needed a footwear advisor. So they hired me. I'm learning Canada. I'm learning Toronto. I'm learning medical in Canada. I'm learning how to, and I'm still trying to somehow make time to talk to the Air Force. And the experience I had with working as a part-time footwear advisor, I started taking other people's shifts. So I ended up becoming a full-timer, not right away, just by virtue of taking other people's shifts that they were not showing, no shows, sick people, you know, I can't come in. Can someone cover my shift? We needed the money like 2 years ago. So I was at those shifts and I couldn't race walk. And then it was just still a really, really difficult spiral. I had South Carolina plates on my car. A couple of people had a few choice comments about that. So things were just super interesting for me and to learn being in a different element where people don't know you and you got to figure it out. And you have a family depending on you, by the way. So I'm in that footwear job for up until 2019. And there was one disagreement my wife and I had in that one room we lived in about going back to the States. And she said, "You're the only one that has the opportunity. Think of this. We're struggling right now, right? We struggled in the States. We struggled in Canada." She said, "You're the only one that can go back to the States today and get a job and to support us." And she said, "You know, I'm looking at my babies on the bed and looking at her, and I realized that the facts of the matter is she's right. She's absolutely right." So while we're waiting for her to get her permanent residence, thanks to my mom's husband, I tried unsuccessfully to continue with the Air Force, but I just wouldn't enlist until I can get my family over. So once we get her, which we got her permanent residence in June 30th or so of 2019, we moved back to the U.S. September 1st. I was a full-time footwear advisor. I was in line to become a manager at this footwear store. Not at that store, probably one of their other destinations, like a smaller one. But it was moving up for me in the footwear industry, which is great. And so in retail. And so I started really coming to my own there. And then we were, you know, starting to figure things out. And then boom, we got to leave. And, but I knew the Air Force soared high and above to me, the opportunities that I saw in other branches that I already had seen. I was already sold with my uncle, with my cousin, with this Olympian, Kevin Eastler, who went to the, you know, that was an Olympian, two-time Olympian for the Air Force, and the last race walker to ever win Athlete of the Year before, little did I know, I would carry that torch later. So the impact that it left of meeting these people and who they were and the professionals and how they handled their emotions and how they handled the adversity of life and the lack of just blaming others, it stood out to me from what I knew in any other realm of the world, you know, that I lived in on either side of the border. And any job that I had. So I moved us back to the States. I was sworn in July 15th of 2019. And we moved back. I'm in basic only 6 weeks after we moved back to the States. 33 years old, but thankful. So my wife now has moved to the States for the first time. She's visited multiple times, but this is the first time now we're planting roots. And this is only 6 months before the pandemic hits. So it turned out.
When you're throwing the dates out earlier, I was trying to put it together. I was like, dang, that's a tough time to enter the military, even though you don't know before. But yeah,
you have no idea. And as I raised my right hand, I knew that there might not be. This is where, you know, faith came in. And it's like, hey, yeah. Lord, I'm taking the leap. I'm taking the leap off this, you know, ledge. And hopefully my parachute opens in the sense of hopefully things work out with the Air Force. Someone had told me when I was in Canada, you know, and people are entitled to their opinion, but she said, "Why would you join the military if you're not going to be away from your kids?" I said, "It's infinitely much more difficult for me mentally to be here in a position, and that could be in the U.S. or Canada, but in a position where you can't provide for them as well. And you're trying to use your degree and you're trying to make inroads and move up the ladder, so to speak. And you're just not able to make headway and even get your head above the water." And I said, "So my kids deserve better. They deserve better. My family deserves better. At least I could provide for them." And I also was attracted to the professional development that, you know, recruiters tell you about. But of course, some skeptics would say, "Oh, don't believe that." But I found it to be even better than what I was presented to me by the recruiters. I couldn't fully fathom the adventure and the career satisfaction and the answers to many of our challenges and problems were about to be resolved one by one through time. So the Air Force to me was an opportunity to serve my country, serve something bigger than myself, take care of my family, learn how to be a better husband and father, you know, to in the process a professional as well, and I wasn't, and take that leap of faith that, hey, I may never race walk again. I might be working on it. I might be a mechanic, right? I don't know what I'm going to do. And so I went in for weather. I was sworn in under the DEP program for weather. And I trusted the Lord, though, as I took that leap and raised my right hand, that I trust that there might be a chance for me to race walk again and reach my potential, even if it's as a master's athlete. I don't know, but I trust you. And here we go. So it was the scariest moment in a way, but also the most pressure relieving moment and freeing moment in a long time of many years of my life to that point. And so much riding on it, you know, with my wife and kids. So here I was in basic in October 21st of 2019. So I had just enough time to get my wife and kids on the affordable health care, or people call it Obamacare. I had just enough time to get them on that, get some food assistance lined up, because I can only do odd jobs. I mean, who's going to hire you when you're only in the States for a month before you go to boot camp? There was just it would cost them more time and money, resources for a shoe store to hire me in Ohio than just say, like, you know, for me just to do odd jobs. So I was weeding yards and doing landscaping for a couple weeks and helped a few people do some odd jobs until I left for basic. And so I was we were in dire straits for a long time. I mean, multiple years, and still paying my college loans and everything else. So it was just, not sustainable. And I did just enough to get me into, you know, get me on that plane to basic.
Dang, bro, that is insane. So I already got 2 pages of notes, man. And that's only on before you got in the military.
I don't think we've ever talked about all this before, but
no.
So you probably, does this surprise you from when you met me in 2022?
Dude, it doesn't, because it's who you are still that person. And I'm going to throw it out there right now. My number three leadership trait outside of my philosophy is meet new people. You have been courageous your whole life, meeting new people, not knowing where it's going to go, right? Or what they're going to think of you. But just from what you've told me, you know, those conversations you struck up with the person in the shoe store in line, the reaching out to the WCAP, you know, runner's father, you know, meeting a new person. Dude, the way we met is literally the same exact story in a nutshell.
It is. And I also had to learn, you know, I also had to forgive myself that you can't change past decisions or change things you did not know about, just like lacking maybe the ability to plan. I learned in the military, we'll probably get on that later, but I had to forgive myself for a lot of things that I just didn't know. And the military has taught me a lot of people, the experience in Canada, you know, I met some great people. I met people in South Carolina. You're right. You meet people and they leave an impact and they help you grow and become better. And then the military, it just put that on steroids.
Then in the military, what's crazy, like you've seen, is it all comes full circle, man. You're going to meet that person again. They're going to be there when you need something. And that's why networking and meeting people is still one of my top five leadership traits, which is build a relationship and meet new people. And I think networking ties all into that, because like you've already seen in your career, I've seen it in my career with you, it all comes first full circle. Sometime throughout the year where we're thinking of something and you go, oh dude, I know a guy who's going to know a guy around that world. You know, I'm going to reach out to Michael. He knows people that do all this stuff. And you know, it's just those little emails. And obviously that ties into some of the stuff we'll talk about later. But
people, I think that kind of shows, I don't want to jump ahead, but I think this is appropriate. People are the most valuable resource. I mean, it's not just plane, or not just the military, or not just a shoe store. It's people that make it special, because people change lives, and they could change your life, not only by knowing a connection or knowing information or wisdom that you don't know, but also just by caring. It encourages other people. Yeah. I mean, we don't say that much, but the people that have just cared, even like yourself, I mean, you helped me get my Norwegian Foot March badge. And if you wouldn't have been a point of contact, it wouldn't have even happened today. And I never knew that when we met, but we could probably move to that later. But if we don't touch on it, that's just, you're right. This is all examples of the value of people and or experiences and the value of hardships. I mean, You know, I had no money in the States and struggled, and I had no money in Canada and struggled. Mm-hmm. So when people say like, well, what's harder? I was like, being broke anywhere is a struggle. I'm not going to sit here and blame a politician or a country. It's like, if you're broke, you're up, you know what creek without a paddle, you know?
I'm going to dive right in. I'm going to jump straight into one of your awards really quick, because I'm trying to connect the dots here. You got 2020 Male Athlete of the Year just in the military during COVID. Dude, how?
Very good point. That's a good question that I had to wrap my head around too. And so Athlete of the Year was a dream award of mine before I ever got in the military. It was a situation where I thought, wow, that would be the pinnacle of success if you not only got in the military, like just get in the military.
I've looked into it. It's you have to have a pretty good resume, because I know I looked into the rugby one because I played college rugby, but they're like, you need to talk about like what rank you were here, what position were you here, what place were you here? And I was like, oh no, not for me right now.
You're right. So Manny, it's not only, I think a few things came together: consistency, timing, and persistence. And so I'll start with persistence. Actually, I'll reverse engineer here.
Yeah, your persistency is amazing, bro.
I think that's maybe with ADHD you have to, or maybe with struggles you have to. You know, maybe when you have a family count on you to feed that kids can't provide for themselves, you just have to. You gotta find a way to produce, or you've got bigger problems. So that makes these other things more doable, I guess. So or more maybe not as dire. So I get in the Air Force. I'm at tech school at Keesler, and I'm trying to remember, there was a couple people that really kind of hit me for the Athlete of the Year. Retired Colonel Steve Pekanofsky, race walker. He has the record, by the way, in the Air Force of 5 Olympic trials. He told me I have to get one more to catch him. But Steve Pekanofsky, in the 1970s and 80s, race walked for the Air Force. There was no WCAT back then. But he was Athlete of the Year in 1989. And he told me that'd be great if you could get in and win that award. I was like, well, I just need, you know, I don't want to get too overexcited, right? Too overwhelmed. I said, I just got to get in the Air Force first. So I get in the Air Force. Kevin Eastler, as he mentors me at the Cheesecake Factory, and we kept a mentorship and friendship up to this day. Kevin Eastler told, you know, there's two things about him. He was Athlete of the Year, and he thought, man, you'd make a great officer, and I even think you could possibly, if you still race walk, become Athlete of the Year with your resume. But that's going to take time. He, you know, he understood, put your first things first. Kevin Eastler impacted this, because when I was at Bright Pat, I didn't have time to train. We just moved. I didn't know my second child had autism. He wasn't yet diagnosed, but we were having some very difficult situations with him at the time. And the kids weren't in school because of the pandemic. We weren't able to enroll them in school. So my wife was just kind of, you know, taking the brunt of that. And I said, I don't know when I'm going to train. I don't think I'm going to have time to train. And he said to me, do the things you should do and it will work out. And that came into later helping me get in WCAT. But going back to how did I get Athlete of the Year? There was one more person, Tech Sergeant Fernando. He told me that I'd be a good candidate for it because he's a race walker. He hasn't yet made a U.S. team, but he's won some awards, he's won some master's awards and placed high at a few national championships, enough that, you know, it's pretty respectable. I mean, he says, I'm not you, but success is relative. He still has done well enough at the national level, and he still has that. You know, I look at people, what is their attitude? What is their drive? Not just their time. Yeah. Not just how fast or slow they are, not just have they been in an Olympic trial, because I feel that that's a very thin scope or a very narrow way to measure a person's value. Despite that I'm in that category of being in the Olympic trials, there's so much more aspects of a person. So this individual, Tech Sergeant Fernando, if you're listening to this, definitely shout out to you, both as a competitor, but also as just someone who's trying to help open doors for other people that have helped certainly impact my life and my family's life now that I'm in the Air Force. When you get to listen to this, just pat yourself on the back and keep going forward, and let's get you to an Olympic trial. I want to help pull him to an Olympic trials next. But Tech Sergeant Fernando said to me, you have, with all your stuff, you might be applying for Athlete of the Year. What he meant was, this is where it gets crazy. I couldn't have foreshadowed how this was going to happen. I was not in the Air Force. my wife was kind enough to let me during that 6 weeks I was in Ohio before I left for boot camp. 1 month to the day before I left for basic training, I was at the Air Force Marathon. And I reached out to the Air Force Marathon director in March of 2019 asking for an elite athlete entry. And they had never done it before. And I was the first one they ever did it before for a race walker. And he said yes. And this became a lifelong friendship with Brandon Huff. Again, another person that I don't want to derail us, but an incredible, incredible person that has impacted me significantly. And Brandon said yes. So I was not going to miss my opportunity to do that event, especially since we moved back to Ohio. And this is my home state, my birth state. And it was just too good to be true. My first active duty base I'd ever stepped foot on a month before I go to boot camp. So I go there. I race walk the Fly Fight Win Challenge. And in the process, it becomes the fastest marathon that has ever been race walked at that event. And so I just took that in the back of my head, right? And then I'm at basic, and I end up getting third fastest of my graduating class of 735 airmen. Third fastest, I was third fastest runtime. And I'm 12 years older than the next oldest person. Of the four that ran with the commander during graduation, this is another colonel here, or another nugget, or bullet. There was eight, four women, four men that run with the commander. And when the commander's command chief walks by in the morning and congratulates us and says, and he looks at me and goes, "How old are you, trainee?" And I said, 33, sir. And he goes, "What was your run time?" I said, "Sir, Trainee Manazi reports as ordered." And I told him, my time was for, the mile and a half this is, right? And so I told him my time was 8:52. And he goes, "That's really good." And so because he's a little bit, I think I look a little out of place. All the four women were under 22. All four men, or the other three men, excluding me, were 20 and under. And so here I am running with the commander leading our, our graduation flight with the flag and, chanting, singing our chant into the stadium and reminding me of like just winning, winning the pen. It just gave me a flashback of like winning the pen relays on the victory lap in 2012, minus that, except here there's a bunch more people in the stands cheering at the Sphinxton, the Sphinxton Center. So here we are. Graduating. So now you've got the Air Force Marathon record, right? You've got one of the best times of war. You got Warhawk at basic with one of the best run times, and you're running with the commander. I go to tech school. This is where things really, this is the biggest bar none thing that happened. I go there, and this is where Tech Sergeant Fernando comes in before Athlete of the Year. He writes me a text on the bus from Keesler to Tech. I'm going from Lackland to Keesler on a 14-hour bus ride, and the day after graduation, right, or the weekend after. So he writes me a text or a Facebook message that says how proud he is of me. Welcome to the Air Force. By the way, you need to ask your leadership now, in all caps, if you want to go to the Olympic trials, because you would probably need an exception of policy for TDY. And I don't know what a permissive TDY is.
Yeah, you probably don't know what any of that stuff is.
I can understand that an exception of policy, what it must mean. I don't know how that would be obtained. Yeah. I don't even know who I would ask.
You're just like, those are words.
Yeah, those are words that this now airman of the last 48 hours would not understand. A1C Manazi, right? And I'm on this bus ride. And of course, this catches my attention. And so with this, he said, "You need to speak to it needs to get approved by your commander. You need to speak to your leadership and ask them for permissive TDY." And I said, "Who in my leadership do I ask?" So I'm like, I'm chomping at the bit, but I'm also nervous because at basic training, you don't even look out the side of your eye at a staff sergeant, let alone bother them. You only speak to your MTIs, or you spoke when you're spoken to. You did not go out and start talking to random, if you see a tech sergeant, it might as well be a colonel to a trainee in terms of a basic trainee's perspective and limited experience and exposure, unless they came from a military family. Little did I know I had military family, but as I had to discover those roots later. I just didn't know it. And I knew nothing about the military I didn't know dress right dress. Didn't know how to march. Marching came pretty natural, thankfully. Anyhow, now we're on this bus ride, and I'm like, I'm overwhelmed. I feel it in my chest. How am I gonna request getting to the trials without getting reprimanded or something worse? I mean, this is gonna be embarrassing if I get chewed out there. I don't know who to even talk to. So he explains to me. Tech Sergeant Fernando goes, "I'll reach out to Air Force Sports because I have a contact. You need to ask them for permissive TDY. You don't know what that looks like, but I do. So I'm going to help you with that." He goes, "You need to ask your leadership." So we're here. Now we're at, you know how they are. They in process you. You're all standing at parade rest with your BMT backpack. And they come up to you and go, "Hand me your orders, hand me your papers, you know, and you got to fill stuff out." And you're doing that for 2 days before they send us on Exodus. So I'm there. And before I leave for Exodus, I go. And first of all, I could race walk for the first time in 2 months, but the break proved to be actually refreshing. I ate the healthiest I've probably eaten in 5 years when I was at basic. I mean, I went from living off food stamps and eating ho-hos and other things trying to stay healthy. Sometimes I just couldn't afford good food. And then you're at, now you're at basic and they feed you pretty good there. Yeah. Plus I don't have crying kids. I don't have a filthy one bedroom apartment that's, you know, got cockroaches and stuff that we had to worry about. I don't have that at basic. Like it's like a different stress. And it was harder to be away from my family, but I had to trust the hardship was going to lead to a better life for my wife and kids. And for myself. But now we're at tech school. Now we've been processed. I've been there almost 2 days. I go to the instructor bay and I ask to speak to the MTLs. And of course they want to know whichever one was the highest on duty, right? It was a tech sergeant. And I asked to speak to them and I explained to them what my request was. Who do I need to send a letter to, or how do I request going to the Olympic trials? And of course they were like, "What do you mean like the Olympic trials?" And I said, you know, where they picked the United States Olympic team. And they're looking at me up and down. And of course you can imagine their disbelief. And they're like, "Do you, you mean like, when is this Olympic trials? Do you have to leave for this Olympic trials?" I said, "Well, yes, it's in California." And they said, "You're going to need to get us something in documentation that proves that you are qualified. And we're going to have to put it through our chain of command." And you can imagine, like, they're looking at me sideways. I mean, this is like, as I leave, and now for now on, you kind of got a little extra eyes on you. And I leave for Exodus the next day, and I go through and I'm like, "Oh man, I need to ask USA Track and Field for my race walk chair, Diane. I need to ask Duff Mahoney, our high performance, to get me a letter of recommendation." And they came through. They actually came through pretty quick. And I told them that I could not compete at the trials, which was factual, without that letter of recommendation. So I come back from Exodus. Now we're in another brief. After the brief, her name was Tech Sergeant Perthel. She said, "If anybody has any questions or anything you need some help on, you need to let me know right now. We have some free time." And I walk up to her and I show her the letter, and she holds it up and she goes, "What is this?" And she holds it as if, like, you know, it was a wet piece of paper, because I think that you have to, and I appreciate her perspective. She doesn't know, like, who's this airman asking me for a permissive TDY to go to the Olympic trial. So she asked me, is that just the name of the event, or is this the actual, like, Olympic trials? I said, "No, it's where they select the Olympic team for Tokyo." And she said, "You do realize you're in the military, right?" And everybody sitting there stops talking and, like, looks at me. And a few of them were even shocked that I, like, "Why would you go up and ask for that?" You know, because they don't know what it is. They don't know what the Olympic, they think I'm asking to go to some 5K. To them, they don't know it any different from going to a local 5K, like some people, right? So they don't realize the gravity of the event that I'm asking her to go to. Some of the other, you know, first time airmen here with me. And she said to me, "What I can do is," she said, "you worry about your classes. You worry about, you know, you stay focused on your school," which understandably that does make sense to tell someone, even though I was in step with that already. And she said, "This will have to go through our chain of command." She said, "But I'm going to be honest with you. This has a 0.09% chance of ever leaving the flight chief's office." And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And she said, "Okay, as long as you know that." And she at least is just being honest with me from her perspective. Yeah. She's sharing her honest perspective, which I appreciate it. At least she's giving me a chance, right? If she relays the paper of letter of recommendation, She did me everything I needed. That's it. But she said to me, I need one more thing from you. You have this letter from your governing body. It looked like the Air Force because it says USATF. So she double looked at it. And I saw that's USA Track and Field. And she said, I need something from someone in the Air Force. Someone in the Air Force who's like a subject matter expert or an authority on sports. They would need to weigh in on this. And that's where Tech Sergeant Fernando came through in the clutch. Got me a letter of permissive TDY from Air Force Sports. If it wasn't for his know-how and his willingness to help, this athlete of the year thing would not have ever taken off. So what happened is, a day shy of a month, they let me know that I'm approved to go. But here's what happens. I'm in weather. You're going to love this. First day of weather class, two Air Force and a Navy instructor come in. And they look at all of us sitting in this semi, like a square, almost like three edges of a square, so they could see all of us. And they look at all of us and they walk up to my name tag and they said, what's your name, Airman? And I said, Airman Manazi. And they said, that's him. And they walk over and they said, so we hear you're an Olympian. And this is the first thing that happens in the class. And so we end up having a discussion about what I'm doing, what I hope to accomplish. And they said, so we hear you're trying to get to the Olympic trials. They said, you represent, you know, we all, you know, we're rooting for you and hope you do well. And then they said, we've never heard of like race walking. I said, well, yeah, you could check it out on my Facebook page. And they said, well, they looked at my last name on my name tag. They're like, I said, okay, maybe we'll look you up on Facebook. That's quite a last name. And I said, here's my business card. And I pull out you have to be prepared for opportunities. So I hand them all my business card and that a kind woman, Beth Basista, donated to have made for me at my church back in Ohio in 2012. And I had like 2,000 business cards for my Olympic hopeful. And so I still have a bunch. I still had some. So I gave it. And the next thing you know, a couple of my classmates, after these instructors leave, they go, Manazi, you got any more of those business cards? I want one of those. And then people are like, dang, bro, you're an Olympian. I said, no, I'm not an Olympian. I'm an Olympic trials athlete. But to people, I kept correcting people for the next like 4 months. And finally, at the time, Tech Sergeant Everhard told me, hey, Manazi, you're spending more energy correcting people than just rolling with it. To them, they don't know the difference. You're the closest thing to an Olympian most people in your weather class will ever know. So just let it go and roll with it. And so I did. And so, I mean, of course, I never took the title. I can't claim I'm not fraudulent in any capacity. But I appreciated the point is the support was there. And that was quite unique. Of course, you have naysayers. Of course, you have people that don't like you or that are jealous of that you getting this certain kind of, you know, shout out for this. But they have no idea what you've had to go through to get to this point. They have no idea how much you sacrificed just to have that conversation with a weather instructor that has to determine if they're going to support your request. Well, lucky for me, you know, this has never happened in the history of the Air Force of a tech trainee on training status to go to an Olympic trials during their training. It was actually should have been statistically a no, but her name was Major. I think she was a major at the time. Holly Holman. She had played volleyball on the Air Force team, so she was the vice commander. Vice commander. So when the request went to my commander, Lieutenant Colonel Williams, she's like, "Oh, I know what that is. This guy's an Olympic trial." She could translate it, right? This is a big deal, not just for him, not for just his squadron. This is an Air Force-like like PR. This is not just about our tech school squadron. So the commander approved me. So I come back from weather class the next day, that night. And of course, I don't know this. And they call me in on the speaker, right, the loudspeaker. And everyone's like, oh, man, did you fail your room inspection? What'd you do? And I go down there. And the tech sergeant has me fill out for what's permissive TDY. And of course, she has to walk me through it because I don't know what I'm doing. And, you know, there's confusion because it's like, well, where are you going? And it's like, what is this? Like, I heard there's a big, pretty big race. So I'm now, you're having to explain and inform people what race walking is, the Olympic trials, what's at stake. And so I go and I had to prove to them that I would miss zero classes. Well, it happened to be on a long weekend. So it saved me that we had a Friday off. The timing, Manny, if the timing had been 1 week difference, I would have been a no because I would have missed weather.
Wow.
So I promised them
You didn't miss any training?
I missed zero. I even studied on the plane ride out there.
Oh, my God.
So I had to. As struggle as it is, you know, you already got struggle, you know, the you know, the weather was man, woo, that's another story. That was tough stuff, but at least for me it was. I go out to the trials. I was ranked seated 8th. I finished 6th. I had the least amount of preparation you can imagine. I'm in basic training. You do 30 minutes of PT and you do strength and running. I did 1 day of race walking to help pace another wingman during basic. So, you know, you lost a lot of training, but I was decently fit because of all the core work I was doing, because of all the marching. So I lost race walk fitness for speed workouts, but overall fitness, I wasn't that bad. So you lost some speed, but whatever, right? They let you go. And I risked all that joining the Air Force. I risked not going to the trials and such. And I knew it. So this is pretty, you know, never happened before in the Air Force. I go there. I finish top 6. I come back the very next week. I start struggling immensely in weather. And I eventually get reclassed. But had that been and then COVID started. Rumors about COVID started emerging about 8 days after I got back. You can imagine. You know, had the timing not been during a long weekend, the timing not been, you know, and I would have missed class. COVID, my starting to get below an 80% in weather, it all would have led to me being declined to go. So the timing was impeccable. It was divine. And so I now am struggling through weather. The pandemic hits. I'm not doing much race walking because I'm struggling immensely through this. I get reclassed and I gave everything I had to weather, but thanks to my weather instructors, they recommended me for reclass not to be, discharged.
Yeah.
And when I went to that commander, Lieutenant Colonel Williams, the same one that approved me, I was embarrassed because this person let you go. You know, I'm thinking, I used to have thrown in my face, oh, you focus too much on sports from people. And I thought, oh no, they're going to play that game with me. Like, you should have been more focused on your class than you were on your sports, which wouldn't have been factual because I was passing when I went to, and I was over an 80% when I went to the trials. However, as the tempo of the course and the difficulty and the complexity picked up, I couldn't keep up. And if you fall off, it's like falling off a moving vehicle. You got to run to catch it. And the chances of that happening are slim to none. And so I go to the commander, Lieutenant Colonel Williams, and you can imagine my tech sergeant, one of my top MTLs, goes, now listen, Manazi, Airman Manazi, he doesn't have much time. You got a minute, 2 tops in there. Sheesh. Just keep it quick. And I said, yes, sir. But he didn't know. People think I don't understand the gravity of situations or fail to recognize it because I'm so friendly and social and willing to share things and you know, exchanges with them. But I was very well aware that my future in the Air Force hindered on this moment. And so thankfully the weather instructors behind my back wrote great reviews about me as a troop. I guess they wrote things that I was helped other airmen who were struggling through class. I didn't realize that they took notes on all that, but they were always watching. You're always being watched. You're always being observed in life. And so they wrote rave things about me as an airman and airmanship, but not for weather, which was fair. I was not cut out. Weather and me were not a healthy relationship. So I go before the commander, Lieutenant Colonel Williams. This guy's like a Coach Carter, man. Gets down to business. No games, no extra fluff. So I go in there with my face mask on, I remember. And I think I removed it briefly because they want to see you, the whole person, right? They want to see your expression. And you get that with seeing people's expressions and facial movements and nonverbals. And so we do our salute. And he goes, all right, we all know why we're here today, so let's just get down to it. Why should I give you another second chance in my Air Force? And I said, although I did not bear fruit in weather, I could benefit the Air Force in other ways. And he goes, and what other ways are you referring to, and what jobs would that be? And I said, my interpersonal communication skills are the greatest strength I bring to this Air Force, and that would reflect in religious affairs, personnel, or admin. He goes, well, that wasn't your top 3 on your dream sheet when you were recruited. You had weather, you had HVAC, you had personnel, you did have religious affairs. He goes, but why these admin and personnel? Why are those all of a sudden? Why'd you change it? And I said, sir, all 3 of those are offered here at Keesler. They are all in my squadron, which means I do not have to leave my building. I don't have to leave my dorm. That means the Air Force does not have to pay to ship me to another base and quarantine me. And he said, we have everything we need here today. And I did the about face and salute and about face of my life. And I came out, walked out, and he had the command chief shut the door. And I hear that's what I'm talking about. And from echo from the office. And I smiled through my face mask. and nobody saw it, but I knew I was, I knew I got my second chance. And this was on my 34th birthday in 2020. So where does this, why does this come to Athlete of the Year still? I'm still in the Air Force, clearly. I had to be in the Air Force to win it. So I got reclassed into admin. I'm on AFI. I'm disinfecting doorknobs. Happens to be the commander's office in one of the buildings because he's in a different building than weather, so I never would see him. So here's what happens. I knock on the door. I ask his secretary, or a civilian secretary, to thank him for giving me a second chance in the Air Force. This is about 2 weeks later. She said, well, actually, he's about to leave for a meeting, but if you make it quick, I'm pretty sure he would like to hear that. I said, oh, thank you, ma'am. So he comes out and he goes, hey, what can I do for you? Airman Manazzi. I said, it's Airman Manazzi. I know who you are. And I said, I just want to thank you for giving me a second chance. And I look forward to, and especially that you gave me one of my choices, which was admin. So thank you. And he looked at me and said, I know you'll do a great job in my Air Force. You stay out of trouble. You help your wingman. He says, I have no worries. I look forward to watching your success. And I said, well, I'm going to do my best in admin no matter what. He makes a scowl when I said admin the second time. He storms away, shuts his door. And I don't know what happened, but I got nervous. And I wanted to get out of there because I didn't want, it was like, for, I was stunned for a second while I was standing there trying to comprehend what just happened. He told his secretary, he's supposed to be religious affairs. And I leave before he comes back out because I don't want to be like thinking like I'm eavesdropping. So I leave and I'm confused. Well, I go back to my squadron that day after disinfecting doorknobs and everything. And my MTL, now Tech Sergeant Little, calls me in on the loudspeaker again. People are like, oh, Manazzi, you know, maybe failed your room inspection. That's just, you know, tech school. And I come in and he said, do you believe in miracles? I said, yeah, I do. I'm still married to the woman of my dreams. He said, ha, that's cute. He rolls back in his chair and says, I would tell you this, but I'd rather you see it. Because if you believe in miracles, I know you wanted this religious affairs and you didn't get it, but take a look at this email. It showed my start date in the email for religious affairs. You would have thought I won the lottery. If you backtrack 3 years ago, 3 years and a month, I told that recruiter in South Carolina that this is the perfect job for me. He goes, you can't have that job. You're not, you have to, you know, you're not, you're a pipeliner. You'd come in as a pipeliner. Pipeliners can't get chaplain assistant, as it was then called. And now it's changed to religious affairs. And so I knew, like, you know, that song, I Got the Power, playing, you know, like in the movie, it just was like, might as well echo through those halls because it just changed everything. And the reason it changed everything is I was put in a job that I had potential to not only be fulfilled, but benefit other people in the Air Force and Space Force. It wasn't just because I wanted the job. And that kind of overshadows the rest of where we are today. But the point is, I had to be in the Air Force to get Athlete of the Year. While I'm in AFI, I end up helping five people pass their PT test that were failing the run portion. And so this went back to that commander somehow. Somehow he took note that I helped people pass their PT test. And I actually had race walked to pace people through their actual test, a couple of them that were failing. Okay. And so what happens is this went around behind my back. And at one point I became a white rope. And this tech sergeant that was on active orders, when he knew I was going to leave pretty soon, you know, I ended up being there 8 months. I was on AFI for 3 months between weather and religious affairs. I had 3 months of it wasn't 3 months. It was about 6 weeks. But after I graduated weather, I was there for 3 months because I was supposed to go to Ramstein, but I got diverted. So I was really involved. I was the chief of recyclables. I was one of the head white ropes, which was an honor, thanks to Jim at the time for they made a new position for basically it was staff or people to volunteer for the worship services, set up, tear down, and recruiting volunteers. And I led that. And that was the first time that it was ever done at that tech school at Keesler. So I earned my rope, so to speak, or my gray shirt position. I also was a volunteer airman leader. So I would march people to class while I was on AFI. I didn't have to, but I was going to be out mopping and cleaning anyway. I got more fulfillment marching these freshly graduated, you know, BMT graduates. And I had the cadence down like an MTI by that point. I went from a person that could hardly do a column right harch to now I was like basically, I felt like an MTI. I was definitely not an MTI, but I had become quite proficient at commanding flights and marching them and staying in step and rhythm with the cadence with the other people commanding flights. And I truly enjoyed it. Plus, it gave me extra steps because I couldn't just go out and race walk. I couldn't, you know, you had the duty day. They weren't going to just let you race walk. You had to, you were going to be cleaning. So I would rather march people to class than clean. And I made new friends that way. You build new relationships with people that are there, and you're like a seasoned veteran. So I was at there all said and done 8 months because of my son having, I was Q-coded for, you know, the autism, my oldest son, and we had to be diverted. And it took, that took a while, but I eventually got Wright-Patterson, which was a dream shot for me. Ended up, that became pivotal. But before I go further, this tech sergeant pulled me aside before I left. And he said, have you been taking notes of everything you've done while you've been here? And I said, well, I've written in my journal and my training log some of the, you know, anything PT related. Like today I did 5K, but 3 of it was pacing a PT test, right? He's like, well, you're going to want to take notes. And we understand what's called a war report. Now, he said, you need to take note of everything you've done, because it matters for a war. He said, you should be up for an achievement medal, or you should be up for below the zone. And I said, well, why would these, what do you mean? Like, how would that, how would these work towards that? Yeah. And he said, he says, well, you volunteer marching these people to you know, the class, you did extra on your time to help people with PT. I said, oh, I didn't do that for an award. And he put his hand up and said, hear me out. You're going to be going up for below the zone in about another year. And he says, you volunteered and you help people. He says, I've been at volunteer events where people are ordering Uber Eats and Starbucks in the back, but they're quote unquote volunteering and getting the hours. He said, you took initiative, which is even more effort, and you saw it through. He said, so you had said, you, he said, didn't you say you're married and had kids? I said, yeah, I have 2 children. He goes, oh, that's interesting. So you would rather let someone promote over you who has no family to support and who sits on their phone instead of actually doing what they came to volunteer to do. And he says, I'm not saying everyone does that. He says, but I've watched it, and I've watched it while you're too busy helping people do it. So you're there as a white robe doing your hours, and you're helping welcome people into the fishbowl. And he said, other people are just trying to, you know, maybe they don't want to, they're too shy or whatever, but they're just playing on their phone. He goes, to me, you both got the same amount of hours, but as a supervisor, I see that you actually were taking action and had an impact. But on paper, you both just look like you did 2 hours of volunteering, but in reality, you had a more measurable impact. He goes, how do you feel about those type of people promoting over you? And he said, I'm not saying it's the end all be all if you don't get promoted. But he said, if you don't, he said, nobody cares about your career like you do. And if you don't take notes of these things, I assure you, nobody else will. And then when you go up for a promotion or an achievement, a medal or another award, you look no different than anybody else, and you give them no reason to make you stand out. And you have more to lose because you have a family depending on you. He said, that's just my advice. You could take it or leave it. But he said, you seem like a pretty motivated guy. I just think you need to know. And thank you for him for doing that. And so what I did is I started to go back and track everything. And Tech Sergeant Fernando, now I'm leaving to go to Wright Pat. And Sergeant Fernando, and I keep in touch. He's about to deploy. And he's like, wow, you got sick at the Olympic trials. You should think about putting in for athlete of the year. And I said, well, are you sure? Do you think I could really win that? And he goes, bro, how many people get top six in Olympic? You did it as a tech school trainee. You don't even get the full amount of time to train, to focus, that other athletes get more time than you to focus on training. And he goes, you've had to have all these distractions and you still finish top six. That's unbelievable. And when I did research on world athletics or world rankings that year, you know, the Olympics got postponed, as I'm sure you're aware. So they became 2021 Olympics instead of 2020. So they never happened in the calendar year 2020. The Olympic trial events after mine, you go, you know, I did it in the last week of January. Come March, there was no competitions, no races, no Olympic trials. So out of the Air Force athlete, top six was the highest any athlete, above any athlete, WCAP. And I was
any Olympic event.
And I was a trainee. I wasn't even like a full-time race walking was like, you know, 20% of my time, you know, if I was lucky on a weekend. And that's because I would do like 3-hour walks on a weekend, or I would do other stuff. And I remember like some, you know, people, of course, didn't understand it. They don't value it. I had a few people, you know, I had a few airmen try to like passive aggressively diminish my race walk achievements when I was on CQ duty. You know, I was working CQ, and I remember a girl's like, "Oh, you think you're special because you got that award?" You know, and that's just coming from their insecurity. Yeah. Like, and they try to like knock it down, right? Knock down my sport, knock down my achievement, and it just shows jealousy, insecurity, and ignorance all in one bundle. And that's okay, right? Those things they make you appreciate the people that have appreciated you and where you achieve things despite other people's limiting you. And so, with regard to that, I'm in a position where I end up putting together all these bullets. You needed 10 bullets, right? And I end up now going back to Tech Sergeant Fernando. I took his advice. I started, you know, he said, you need to write yourself a letter before you leave. No, he didn't say that. He said, you need to leave Heisler with a letter written by your commander. If your commander is the one that approved you and has been so aware and supportive of all of the people that you helped with their PT, he said, you need it documented. So he basically, without knowing it, he mirrored what was said to me by that tech sergeant in religious affairs of tracking it. He said essentially the same thing, except this time for the Athlete of the Year award, he said, You need to request a letter from your commander, because if you go to Wright Pat or any other base, you're an A1C, you're a first time airman. You don't understand what that means, but basically you don't have the reputation or any, it doesn't mean anything for you to go out there and just say you did it. Yeah. You're going to need their support. And so he saved my butt once again with this. And what now happens is I go to, I'm nervous, of course. Like, how do I message my commander and ask him for that? And I don't even talk to my commander like that. So I was a volunteer airman leader, and I was in a private meeting with other airman leaders to discuss the climate of the morale during the pandemic of people in the training quad, a triangle, I mean. And so I now am in this conversation, in this meeting. And I just took a shot. And at the end of the meeting, so here's what happened. Before the meeting, you know, you get there early, right? You definitely don't show up. Yeah. On time is late. And the military helped me surely with that. So I go to this meeting. And before the meeting starts, you know, we call the room to attention, of course. But I caught him in the hallway before we call it to attention. I had to learn the game, right? Learn how to opportunize things. And so I said, sir, I have a question for you. He goes, what do you need? And I said, can I speak to you after this meeting? He goes, how long is it going to take? I said, real quick, I just have a request. He goes, after the meeting, you come up to me. And so we had our meeting, you know, which I participated in as a volunteer airman leader. I was, so after that meeting, I go up to him as promised. And I said, sir, I've become aware of this award called Athlete of the Year. It was made known to me by another Air Force athlete, Tech Sergeant Fernando, of course. And so it's apparent that I need a letter of recommendation, because since I'm leaving this base as a trainee to go to my first duty assignment, I would need a letter of recommendation to validate the things I have done by a commander so that it shows that it's valid and, you know, it's been signed off on. He said, absolutely. I'd love to help you. And so he wrote a letter, and this letter he wrote me was like unbelievable. I almost cried when I actually saw the letter, but I didn't get the letter till I got the Wright Pat. So I get the Wright Pat, and I'm there for 2 weeks. And ironically, you know, the Air Force Marathon, home of the Air Force Marathon, I'm down the hall from the Air Force Marathon director at the time, Brandon, who became, of course, a lifelong friend, mentor, and priceless support that's helped make all this miraculous things happen. And I now and with my Tech Sergeant Devadon, I brought up my supervisor. He was my supervisor's supervisor. He was about to deploy in a couple months after me getting there. But he calls me in his office after 2 weeks of me being there. And he goes, do you have any questions or anything you're not sure about? And I said, I do. And I brought up the Athlete of the Year. And he goes, hold up. He goes, you've been in the military for a whole 2 weeks. And he goes, and I said, sir, and he goes, no. He goes, and I'm at parade rest now. And he's like, you have, I think this is fun. I'm trying not to laugh, Manny. He goes, you mean to tell me you've been in the Air Force a whole 2 weeks because your tech school and basic don't count as time in the real military. He goes, you just got here and your job is to learn your job. He goes, and what's it called again? I said, race walking. Goes, yeah, any walking you want to do, you could do that on your own time. But when you're here, your job and mission is to learn the chapel core. And he said, and what's this? You said there's an award? And I said, yeah. He goes, so you're telling me what I'm hearing is you've been here for 2 weeks. You've done nothing except turn on a computer. And you think you deserve an award. And I said, sir, I think there's a misunderstanding. He says, oh, you're right. There is a misunderstanding. And we're going to take care of that. He says, I'm going to look into this. He said, you're telling me there's an athlete, by the way, he goes, what's that award called? I said, athlete of the year.
Oh my gosh.
He goes, I've been in the Air Force for 14 years and I've never heard of such a thing. He goes, and you're going to been in for 2 weeks and you're telling me there's an award called athlete of the year. And I said, I'm sure of it. And he goes, yeah, well, I'm going to look into that. We'll see about that. He goes, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go back. You're going to crack open your CDCs. You're going to start your upgrade training. You're going to learn your job. And he goes, and let's worry about that. And then maybe we could talk about all this. I'll look into this athlete of the year that you claim exists, some unicorn award and some sport called, what's it called? I said, race walking. And he laughed. He goes, I'm sorry. He goes, I'm going to have to look into that. So he like leaves. And me and him are best friends now to this day. And he said to me, I later found out he went home to his wife and said, we got this guy that's older than me came in. When he came to my office, I almost went to parade rest thinking it was the new first shirt. And I then he starts talking to me about some sport called walking. And his wife said, what? He goes, yeah, this guy talks. He's asking me all these questions about an award that doesn't exist. And he goes, this guy's going to be a problem. I go home that same day and I tell my wife goes, how was your work? I said, I'm really overwhelmed right now. I think there's a big misunderstanding that happened. And so, and I don't think the supervisor cares for me too much. And so she goes, okay, don't talk about race walking. Just like lay low for a while. I said, well, he asked me if I had any questions. She's like, I know, but you're just going to have to show them that you're committed. And so what happened was, and my wife was exactly right. That's when I called Kevin Eastler and he said, do the things you should do and it will work out. So now what happens is, fast forward, I'm nervous because I don't know anything about an award tracker. I mean, I'm learning how to do religious affairs, learning all the things involved with my primary duty. And I get an email to go see my first sergeant. And so I go to see my first sergeant. I don't know what it's for. I found out my family was put on a Christmas, like a secret Santa list. And the first sergeant said, so how are you getting along at Wright Pat? I say, great. It's December. And he goes, at this point, December 2020. And he goes, do you have any questions or anything? I said, I'm a little nervous to ask. But a few months ago, I tried to ask and I didn't get an answer yet. But apparently there's an athlete of the year award. A chair in the office next to him slides out and the commander goes, that's an A1 award. What do you want to know about that award? I said, well, sir, I have a letter of recommendation from my previous squadron commander at tech school. And I need to know who to give it to. He said, I need to give it to someone at my new base to support of this award, since I don't have much time here, you know, and we don't want to miss the window. And he said, what you're going to do is you're going to go to this sports office. And I said, well, actually, I'm supposed to be back at the chapel. He goes, I'm your commander and I'm going to tell you what you're going to do. I said, yes, sir. He goes, you're going to go to the sports. You're going to go to the sports office. You're going to ask to speak to, you know, this person. So I go to the sports office. I speak to Tanya, who's at the front desk. And she goes, can I help you? And she's a sweet lady, but of course, she's never seen me before. And I tell her about this award and she goes, I think I've heard of that award. That's pretty rare award. And I said, yeah, it is. I said, apparently it is. And it seems like not a lot of people know about that. It, you know, like weren't sure about it, you know, alluding to my initial conversation when I got to the base. And so she goes, what have you done that you would get this, that you, I said, well, I just have a letter of recommendation. She goes, can you show me that letter? And I hand it to her. And she goes, you're going to need to wait a minute. I'm going to need to call our director of sports and fitness on this one. So she calls him and I hear the phone call, right? Even though I'm standing there, they're on the phone. And he goes, well, he has to have 10 bullets of, you know, why he would be, does he have 10 bullets? And she goes, he wants to know if you got 10 bullets. I said, yes, ma'am. I have them right here. And and he goes, list off three of them. And I listed off six in the country at the Olympic trials, nationally ranked six, 33rd in the world. And he goes, please let me speak to this guy, this airman. She goes, he wants to talk to you. Hands me the phone. This guy asked me for the rest of my bullets, asked me to email him that letter of recommendation, email him all my, you know, accolades. And they give me a tour of the facility. They introduce me to the entire sports staff. And then he concludes with, by the way, I've always wanted to get an athlete out of the year, right, Pat? We've had a couple nominated and we've never gotten one. So this, I think this is a very good shot. So what happens now is you ask me, why did I get, what bullets were on there that mattered? I have the Air Force Marathon event record.
Yep.
All right. I had one social distance contest, two of them, distance contests at Keesler during the pandemic. That's another story, but I did the most miles in the month of May, and I did the most miles in a 2 weeks period for Air Force Sergeants Association. So that's technically like two things, right? You've got two social distance events. I had won a PT test. I won the run portion of a PT test there before the pandemic hit on Valentine's Day. I won a PT test with like 300 people, and I won the run. And so that got put on there. I had the Keesler base record for race walking, the PT test. The MTLs volunteered me to race walk the PT test. Since I passed it, you know, with flying colors earlier, yeah. They're like, okay, now you, they had a mandatory PT test. And I said, well, what they did is they said, well, you're going to race walk it because we have what happened was I didn't know this, but there were people saying that the walk time's impossible to do. Basically blaming
the hard. It's hard, yeah.
It's deceptively hard. And so people think it's easy and they volunteer for it because of an ailment or an injury. And they think it's like going to be an easy route, but then they fail it. And what happens is they're like, well, this isn't impossible. The Air Force has put out an impossible standard. So what they did is they, unknown to me at the time, were like, we're going to have that speed walker do it. That race walker just got back from because, you know, I went to the Olympic trials. It was the talk of the base of the training squadron. And so the MTLs were like, okay, this guy got six in the Olympic trials. We're going to have him do it. We're going to have him go with the people walking and show them that it can be done. And so I didn't realize that in that moment, but I ended up putting out the PT record or the record for Keesler still stands the fastest walking portion of the PT test. So that's four bullets now. Five is I'm sixth at the Olympic trials. Sixth bullet is I'm world ranked 33rd at the time of the application, globally for the 50K. And that's because, you know, like that's just timing, right? That's number six.
There weren't a lot of races that year. Yeah.
After that, a lot got canceled. And you could never have told me that was going to happen. That's out of my control, right? Like, I would have, laughed in your face if you'd said, oh, you're going to be 33rd ranked. But yeah, right, I'm in tech school, right? And then number seven, and honestly, my performances would not – I would not have thought that it would have been that high of a mark. But things happen the way they happen. Number seven, I was nationally ranked top 10 in an Olympic distance within USA Track and Field for the 11th year in a row, the longest of any active male race walker, the most continuous streak of that. That's number seven. Number eight was I was nationally ranked sixth at the end of the year for USA Track and Field News for the 50K race walk. So I was like, that's pretty darn good for your event in Olympic distance. So that's eight bullets, right? Just athletic. Number nine was I was second at a virtual, the largest walking event in the country. I got second that year. And then number 10, I have to remember, I think that was nine. There's one more I have to remember and I'm trying to remember I know what 10 was. I put on a virtual event on the base, a virtual 5K in honor of Captain Ron Zinn. And it got recognized by USA Track and Field New Jersey and got like a bunch of, it got a bunch of bumps for it. That was number 10. And then what happened was I had two airmanship bullets, help people PT test. And then there was something else for airmanship. I think it was Air Force Sergeants Association Award or something of that nature.
You have the 1-4 AFSA annual awards.
Well, that came later. I have to backtrack. Okay. And I don't have this letter. I'm trying to remember. I don't have my bullets right in front of me. So I'm trying to go back about 3.5 years in my memory bank. But there was a 10th bullet that I might be amiss on at the moment for athletically. But I know I got a airmanship, they call the whole airman concept, airmanship. Yep. I got one for helping five people pass their PT test. And then I got another one for volunteer hours or something of that sort while I was at Keesler. The tenth bullet for athletics, it came through. I'm going to remember what it was, and I'm going to tell you once I remember. But I'm at a miss of what it is. But anyhow, it doesn't matter. The point is, the biggest ones were the sixth of the Olympic trials, the world rankings, you know, sixth nationally ranked. I mean, these were some real heavy bombs to drop, right? And so I end up getting that same year. I did find out I won the Air Force Sergeants Association chapter award at Wright Pat, and then I was our Division I winner. And I ended up going to the AFSA convention, totally underestimated what a fun and educational time that was going to be. And Chief Bass ended up coining me.
Oh,
but that was because, so I met her. So go back in time. She was our command chief at Keesler. And then I had lunch with her when I was in weather. And when the commander, Colonel Blackwell, now General Blackwell, she came into the fishbowl, we had 250 new BMT graduates to get a brief from the white ropes. But, you know, of course that's going to be put aside because we're about to have a commander come in. So somebody was supposed to call the commander to the room to attention, but she got scared. So I just jumped in and called the room to attention, and Chief Bass entered first. And I mean, 250 bodies immediately stood up like in unison. You heard all the feet moving and everything. And it got dead silent within about 5 seconds. And Chief Bass walks up as she opens the door and looks at me and she says, "Well done, Airman." And I said, "Good morning, ma'am." And like that, I mean, I don't know what else to say, right? You know, so there was that facial recognition. Now she comes to Wright Pat, and I'm buying a guitar stand or a music stand for the Protestant chapel. I'm at Guitar Center, and the Brandon. This is June of 2021, and the race director Brandon Huff says you need to come to my office immediately. And I said I'm off base, but I could be there in 30 minutes. He said it might still be possible, but get here. And I don't know what this is for. And I said, "Is everything okay? Are you okay?" And he said, "No, I'm okay. This is for you. Like, you need to get here." And I'm like, what's he going to have me do? A ribbon cutting or something of the marathon, the new course? I don't know what's going on. I have like no idea what that means. And so I get there, and a couple chief master sergeants are like, "Whoa, you can't come past here." And Brandon goes, "Oh no, he's with me." And so I come, and he goes, "Simsaf Bass, I know you're about to leave, but there's one more important thing I have to do. I got to introduce you to A1C Manazi." And she goes, she looks at me. She goes, "You look familiar." I said, "Ma'am, we had lunch together and we met at Keystar." She goes, "That's right." She said, "So you're weather, right?" And I said, "No, I'm religious affairs. I got reclassed." And she goes, "Oh, okay, great." And so what he does is he put me on her radar, and he says, "A1C Manazi is he's a high flying airman. He's a great guy to know. And he's our ambassador for the marathon. He's wearing my shirt at the Olympic trials this summer. And we're hoping to see him in Tokyo." And I mean, he's just really just giving me the best introduction better than I could ever do myself. And she said, "Wow, how fast do you walk?" And I told her one of my times. And she said, "I can't even run right now that fast." I said, "Well, if I could ever be a resource for PT or helping other airmen walk or yourself on how to walk more effectively and efficiently, for the PT test or just for a fitness outlet," I said, "I'd be happy to do it." And she said, "Good luck with athlete of the year. When do you find out the results?" And I told her, I said, "Anytime now." She says, "Well, I'm eager to hear them." And I said, "Would you like me to let you know when they come out?" She said, "Yes." I said, "How do you want me to contact you?" I said, "Email or social media." She goes, "Either's fine. Let me know the results." Well, so a couple other people were supposed to let her know the results, you know, leadership, chain of command, but they never did. They fell through. And I end up at the AFSA convention with a newspaper. So I find out after she leaves, I found out I did not get below the zone. And then within the same day, I found out I was not picked for below the zone, which was probably on the back end of it was a massive learning opportunity for me and actually probably contributed to me making staff my first time. But at the time, it wasn't the news you want to hear. And at the same day, I found out I was awarded Athlete of the Year, June 16th, and I also was approved to go to the Olympic trials. I was approved my TDY. So things are changing too rapidly for me to comprehend or almost appreciate. And so Athlete of the Year, I got it, you know, public affairs at Wright Pat did an article in the newspaper, and I took a copy to give to Tech Sergeant Fernando at this AFSA convention because he was going to be there, the one that's, you know, played a role and helped me. Well, Chief Bass was there. And because I was an award nominee, we got to see her early morning for a breakfast and have a few words of wisdom with her, me and seven other airmen. And before she leaves, I walk up and I said, Chief Bass. And she says, I said, before you leave, I just want to give you, I said, this has the results of the athlete of the year in this article. She said, thank you. I look forward to reading it. And I got reprimanded for going up to Chief Bass. Someone's like, you don't ever go up to Chief Bass like that. She's got a schedule, you know. And I mean, so she walks by and I figured she's never going to read that article. Well, that night at the awards dinner, I didn't win the international, the highest level, AFSA, you know, Airman of the Year. I won the next, you know, which is, and you know what? I won something better, in my opinion, for me. Chief Bass and I went to get a picture together. I wasn't going to bother because we got a picture, a group picture that morning, and another airman, Bullet, who also he and I didn't win, but we were having a good time, enjoyed just being there that we were nominated. He said, "Let's get a picture with Chief Bass in our semi-formal." And I said, "We got a picture with her this morning." He goes, "We weren't in our service dress." I said, "You're right, we weren't. Let's go get a picture with her because you know Chief Bass Sergeant Air Force. I mean, she's decked out. They have a different type of like, you know, they just everything. It's just a unique uniform. She's got tons of a huge ribbon rack and she's an incredible person. Like she was an incredible, encouraging person in my interactions with her. And so I go up to her and she says, "Oh, Airman Manazi, I read your article. Very impressed. Very inspiring." She goes, "And congratulations, you're the first recipient of my new coin." She hands out like the size of a sewer lid. And I'll send you a picture later if you want, but that was one of my most proud moments. That's probably one of the most memorable moments of my Air Force career. I had to go for a walk and like calm down outside because I just couldn't believe that happened. So, you know, I'm an A1C. I don't get below the zone. I don't get this international award, but all these other things were just like my old supervisor said, unicorn awards, and they happened. So now I'm about to deploy, you know, things were pretty still crazy. Kids didn't go to school that year because of the pandemic. The school said they, you know, were over their quota. So my wife's at home with the kids, and we did the best we could. My second youngest gets diagnosed with autism. My wife, I barely got her license. Pat get her help train her to pass her driving test before I deployed fall of 2021. And then I deployed to Saudi Arabia. And that's where I met probably a guardian angel, Lieutenant Colonel Pineda. And the whole thing is just crazy. I don't know if you want to go into that or do you want to?
So here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking we have to do a part two. This one I want to title is literally just 2020 Air Force Athlete of the Year journey, you know, like, cause that's like that right there. Like I have two pages of notes on your first year in the military.
Well, yeah.
Like from basic to, you know, year cycle-ish.
It was my first 21 months or first 20 months.
21 months. There you go. Yeah. And then I still want to do a part two with, man, dude, so much more like how, you know, after that, how we met, the deployment, those little things, how it all comes full circle. Yeah.
WCAP, where we're at now.
Yep.
ALS.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, let's do it. I'm down.
So for everybody listening, this was part one. We will do part two and then we'll drop that one later. Because, man, just your story alone right there is so captivating. Like I told you before, I love it where I don't have to say anything. because you have so much passion, so much enthusiasm. It's just – it's there. So it was cool, man. And I appreciate you opening up to telling me the beginning of your story and how you got to that athlete of the year. Oh, so, man. I think that's something people just want to know. So.
No, 10 years ago, I was, you know, in Youngstown, Ohio, I was living in my mom's house and people are telling me to get a job and, you know, time to grow up from the race walking. And, you know, their advice, given the perspective of my life at that time, I don't fault them. Their intentions were, I guess, most of their hearts were in the right place because that's what normal people do is they get a job and they move on beyond when they're not meant to be in the Olympics. But I'm telling you what, though, it worked out exactly as it was meant to.
Man, thank you. Thank you, dude.
Thank you. I look forward to part two and I appreciate you having me on. I mean, anything I could do that if it encourages others, it's worth it. If it encourages one person.
Yeah. So what I'll do after this is we'll stop recording. I'll get your info. I'll throw it in the show notes. I'll definitely emphasize the part two and we'll try to get that done within the next few weeks. But this one will be the part one for everybody listening. with just a journey beyond journeys. Mike, man, thank you, dude. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Manny. You're awesome.
Yeah, so just hang on just for a little bit after. Sound good?
Yep.